This is a stand-up New York Labs production, providing you podcasts since 2013.
What's up, motherfuckers? It's your old pal Ian here, and I am excited today to say that I have a very special guest with me who is near and dear to my posterior. He's sitting next to me, and his name is Sergio Chacon. He is a very funny comedian and a wonderful person on and off stage, and he's here with me today.
Holy shit, that was a very warm introduction. I appreciate you, Ian. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I'm excited to have you, dude. We've been buds for a long time. And I always have a good time whenever we hang out. And you were just giving me shit about how I don't eat my meals whenever we sit and have a meal together.
You know what it is, Ian? You stay on that dirtbag shit. No, seriously. This guy just smoked on Marlboro Light. The entire cigarette in two pulls. Two pulls, and you were done with the cigarette. Talking about how you're coughing up different colored phlegm. And then we walk into the studio, and you light up an e-cigarette. Well, sorry. You start puffing on an e-cigarette.
Uh-huh.
No fucks given, Pop.
Yeah.
You bred different, man.
Yeah, that's right. Some people got blood in their veins. I got piss and vinegar.
Damn.
You know, it's different. But you on that dirtbag shit, too. You told me to throw the pack on the street. Yeah. Sergio was raised not among human beings, but he was raised. Some people were raised in houses. Some people were raised in neighborhoods. Sergio was raised in the concrete jungle of New York City. That's right, Lower East Side.
I'm so tired of hearing about how the Lower East Side used to be.
Oh yeah,
from guys who weren't there.
Why?
Because I was like, oh my god, it used to be really bad over there.
Uh huh.
It was bad, but I knew. Growing up, I didn't know anything other than that.
Growing up, you didn't know it was bad.
Yeah, I knew. I thought, I didn't really think much of it, right?
Uh-huh.
But now I have a contrast, right, to what it is now.
Right.
Where it's like a lot of new developments,
uh-huh.
a lot of money, different restaurants,
uh-huh.
Beautiful homes, all
so
over.
So is it kind of like a girl when they have an experience with a guy, and then years later they're like, oh, I think I was raped.
Like
you grew up with like just an awkward experience, and then now you're like, wait a minute, my childhood was very terrible.
Yeah, I don't know if my childhood was terrible, but the neighborhood was, you know, it was dirtbag, man. I seen a lot of drugs and a lot of violence, you know what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying? But that was the Lower East Side. And there's pockets in the Lower East Side that are still like that, but
mm-hmm.
not much.
Like, what was your earliest memory of like, drugs and violence? Was it in your own household, or was it outside?
I would say...
Because you grew up with like, 27 family members in a studio apartment, right?
No, it was me, my sister,
uh-huh.
and my mother. My mm-hmm. mother raised me and my sister, but she worked a lot. And my mother had kept an open door to all of my sister's friends. So there was a lot of girls in my house.
Mm-hmm.
So they used to always be in the mix, and they would be experimenting with, you know, drinking and,
mm-hmm.
and smoking and all that stuff. So there was a lot of, like, activity going on in the house. So if I had to say my first, like, look at drugs would be, like, you know, mescaline tabs and weed in the house.
Uh-huh. And how old were you?
I don't know, like 6.
I was young. And what year was that?
Man, that was 85, 86.
85. Oh, wow.
Yeah. When the Mets won the World Series, Darryl Strawberry was my idol.
Yeah? And so you never dabbled in crack like him, though?
No. So that was my early, you know, and as far as like some violent shit, like there was always, at a very young age, kids who were like, unusually, like, violent. Like, at school, like, you didn't really see it. But every now and then, I grew up in Baruch Projects. You know, I'll just be playing with my friends, and some crew, like, will roll up. And I remember this kid named, he used to terrorize the neighborhood. His name was Mookie. And he had a brother named John John. And I saw them roll up, like, on this kid right before me. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna hold my ground. I'm not gonna, you know, go upstairs. I'm out here to meet my friend, play a good game of softball. And I should have left, because he rolled up on me. He pulled out a big-ass knife.
No way.
And put it to my neck. And I remember I was like 9, 10 years old. And, you know, that was like one of many times I've seen Mookie and John John roll up on cats and terrorize them, you know.
And so
but there was a bunch of Mookies and John John.
He put a knife to your neck and did what?
And he was like, you in a crew? And his boy was telling me, hit him with the softball. I'm not going to hit him with the softball. And he was like, that, you know, had the knife against my neck. Like 11 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
They were probably hanging out all night.
Right.
You know.
And how old was Mookie?
He was around my age, you know.
Oh, my God.
I was fascinated by that kid because of how daring and brash he was.
Uh-huh.
Like, he was out there, man. Every kid that I knew was bullied by Mookie. That kid did not give a fuck. He was wild. And then, you know, growing up, there was a bunch of Mookies and John Johns. Mm-hmm. That was just like one that crossed my path. But it was a bunch of characters like that. You know, kids who came up from real fucked up, abusive, I'm sure, like, drug-filled homes. And that was a product of that, you know? So, but it's changed. Now, I'm sure there's Mookies and John Johns, but I'm damn near 40. I don't deal with that shit anymore.
Right. Do you think, so you don't know what happened to Mookie or
John? I heard he was doing time in jail.
You don't say.
Hard time, football, football numbers.
The football numbers, what's that?
Like, you know, the back of a jersey has a high number.
Oh, no way.
Like football numbers.
Oh, my God. Wow. For those of you listening, if you can't tell, Sergio, the way he talks, there's a picture that perfectly describes the way he talks. It's a picture of him holding snakes at the age of like 19 in
snakes,
Timberland boots. Yeah.
Large iguanas, I had them all.
Yeah.
I love exotic animals.
You still have them?
Yeah.
Yeah. I went to your spot a couple weeks ago, and you made me hold your snakes.
You were scared to death.
I was so scared.
I was very disappointed in the way you reacted to holding a baby snake.
I've never held a snake before.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
But I've always been fat. You know, that was my escape as a kid, too. I liked exotic animals.
How'd you get into those?
I don't know. I took out a library book. That was my first memory, was taking out a library book, and it was all about snakes. And I studied them, and then I started collecting them. And I loved them.
How do you collect snakes in a city?
I would go to the pet shop on, it was on Houston Street, what is a big-ass hotel now, but it was JBJ Pet Store. And this family from, like, upstate owned the pet store. And every kid from the projects used to go to them to get their rabbits, their snakes, or whatever animal they wanted. So they were like a mom-and-pop shop in the Lower East Side.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, and I bought my first garter snake there. His name was Irving. Out of a high school I never graduated from. Yep, Irving. And I got another snake named Chelsea.
Yeah?
Chelsea and Irving?
Uh-huh. Are they doing football numbers now?
Nah, I don't know. But those are my first animals.
Yeah? That's great. And so you, when you were younger and you got held up at knife point by Mookie and John John, and every little area had their own Mookie and John John, what stopped you from turning into a Mookie and John John?
I was scared, man. My defense mechanism or my refuge was home. Like, I would stay home a lot and play video games and, you know, hang out with my animals and make all the excuses in the book to try to not go outside, because I became sheltered. I became so scared of going outside.
Because of those kids.
Yeah, man, because of kids like that. You know, at the age of, like, this is why I knew, like, it was a dirtbag and violent neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
At the age of 10, so that happened. The knife was pulled out on me, like, at 9. At 10, I was jumped by, like 6 kids.
Uh-huh.
They came up to me. I was out, like, around 10 o'clock at night, way too late for
10-year-old,
maybe not, I don't know. But I remember
unchaperoned.
What was that?
Unchaperoned.
Yeah, I was by myself in the side of my building, but everyone was out. And you know when you hear the ice cream truck? That usually means like, oh man, the ice cream truck is here. Let's get, and that's a happy moment for a lot of kids. I hear that shit. And I still think of violence.
No.
I think of hot summers. I think of shootouts. And I think of violence because I've seen, that was the background music to a bunch of violent shit in my childhood. Every time the ice cream truck was out, it was usually a really hot summer day and some dirtbag shit was going down. And I remember this one time I'm walking just home. And once again, I went against my intuition. Like these kids were rolling up and I made eye contact with one of them. And I was like, maybe I should go the opposite way. But I said, no, I'm not going to be scared. And this kid came out of nowhere, and they jumped me, like six kids. Just punched me, bah, 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 bah.
They didn't say anything.
They didn't say anything. Oh, one of them said, you talking shit, shorty? That's what I was saying. And I was taller than him. Yo, they fucked me up. Like, I was so shocked by it.
Oh, my God.
That was
God.
The first time I got punched in my face.
Right.
Like, you know, a solid bah, bah, you know. Then my sister comes out. She was wild. She's like 13, you know, 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. She comes out with her friends looking for the kids, you know. But I wanted to do through things like that very early on. So I was scared to go outside. I was scared to, you know, to fuck around and play in the streets because kids like that existed. I didn't grow up like that. Like, I wasn't a kid like that. I didn't come from an abusive home. You know what I'm saying?
You came from an abusive neighborhood
environment. Yeah, yeah.
Right, right.
You know, luckily for my sister, she knew a lot of people, so I was somewhat protected from a lot of that. But I still had to fight, you know, like in school, you know, like there was shit that went down. It was violent.
Yeah.
You know, now, and it took me years to look back and realize that was a violent, you know, place. And that was Baruch Projects. I then moved to Third Street, which, you know, a bunch of comedy shows are popping. We got Popo Lounge. You got the, what's the, UCB?
Right
in the corner. Yeah. Like, now it's just an on and popping area. But I moved to that neighborhood, and that's when I really seen, like, drugs. Like, I'd seen drugs in Baruch. But I think because they're, like, it's like a, it's, you know, these projects, it's more internal. You know, like, people do it in the hallways. And, like, I don't know, for some reason, when I was on 3rd Street, I see people do drugs in the street a lot more often. So I would, you know, or maybe the boom was just really popping. You know, heroin, like early 90s, it really starts to show. Because that's what I remember when I first moved to 3rd Street. There would be lines outside my building, people trying to cop drugs from the local deli. Like lines.
Damn.
Yeah. You know, like lines. Like people, like New Jack City shit. You know, like people copping drugs and not being able to wait, going in between cars and like shooting up. Like, you know, me going to school, like,
once again,
it took me years to realize, oh, that's not normal. Like, you're not supposed to see drugs in abundance like that.
Yeah.
All the kids I went to junior high school, they would sell drugs, you know, on the corner. So early on, it was like some real.
And would you tell anyone about that? Or was it just
everyday stuff? No, it was a known thing. Right, yeah, it was, you know, it wasn't like, oh, I seen this. It was just part of growing up. All my friends, a lot of them like sold drugs, and listen, I think my mother did a decent job because she instilled work at, you know, ethic in me. So I always had a job, and I've always, you know, but every now and then, you know, you kind of waver, you kind of sway
right
to that dark side, you know. But I was never consumed by it.
Right.
You know, but 3rd Street, I seen a lot of crazy shit. I remember this one time I was with my friend Saban, and it's funny how like when you're young, you become desensitized to shit because we're like in front of my building and a local neighborhood guy, we see him, we hear gunshots, bah, 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 and we see him running down the street and it's almost like a cartoon, like a guy with a gun above his head and a money bag in the other, like running down the street like this. But except he didn't have the money bag, he just had like a sweater or something. He had the gun like this and he runs right past us. And we look in the corner and I see like this, what looked to be like a guy the size of Big Pun, a big fat motherfucker, just laid out. He shot that guy around the corner and ran right past us. And like, you know, it was literally right in front of us. And I swear to God, like an hour later, we was playing tag. Like, you know, it's just like, after the cops asked, do you know who did this? We all knew who did it, but we didn't say shit.
Right.
You know?
Did you know not to say shit, or did somebody tell
you?
You
know what? I was saying shit until my friend looked at me like, don't say shit.
Right.
Like, I was like, oh, yeah, we saw a guy running, and I knew who the guy, but I never said the name.
Right.
And I was like, yo, what the fuck am I doing? Am I crazy? Like, this guy lives on our block.
Right.
You know?
So someone else knew not to say something because there'd be consequence.
Yeah.
Right.
You know.
Wow.
Yeah. So a lot of my childhood, you know, you grow up rather than focusing on studies or things that really matter later in your life, because that matters during the present time, you know, to protect yourself, to be tough, to be part of something, to show that you're not soft, so you don't get taken advantage of. A lot of my energy was put into that. Mm-hmm. Not that I've joined a gang, but you do, you know, there's ways that you conduct your business and carry yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's a defense mechanism. You're trying to build an armor to get through this shit, you know? So I look back, I'm like, damn, a lot of my time was spent trying to, like, create, like, some sort of defense mechanism and a team to deal with that, whether it was in school, you know? So it's interesting how, you know, how much time you put into things like that.
Like, why? What would you do?
You know, you would everything from drinking, because, you know, I realized that, you know, like, when I first started drinking, I was like, damn, I never felt so confident.
Right.
You know? And I didn't know why I was drinking. I knew I was having a good time drinking, but I didn't realize that I was drinking because I felt a lot more tougher. Like, there was no real thought process. It was like from the head to the mouth. Bam. So when I spoke, I felt a lot more confident. I just moved around with a better swag.
Yeah.
That was like, ooh, I can maneuver in this environment a little more fluidly because of it. But I didn't realize that. At the time, I was like, oh, I'm young and I'm having a good time. You know, you try to, you know, what you're seeing and what was being glorified is, you know, violent shit. So there was times where I kind of dabbled in that. But I wasn't like that. That wasn't like the core of my being. I wasn't like a mean, nasty, violent person. But, you know, sometimes you get pulled into that a little bit, you know. But I paid for it. You know, you start trouble with the wrong kid. Or kids, it comes back to you. It's karma, you know?
What happened?
I remember this one time I was like 17, 18 years old, and we were drinking 40 ounces of like St. Ives and Old English. You know, I remember exactly what I was wearing. I was like wearing like a Tupac shirt with like his tattoos on the shirt.
A fucking
do-rag.
Right.
You know. me and my boys taking pictures of the 40 ounce.
Right.
You know. And we're starting trouble in the street, like four of us. And we're just like starting trouble with random people.
Right.
You know. And we started with the, you know, it was like 5 o'clock in the morning. We're making our rounds, you know. And it's a game, you know, what we were doing was just approaching random people to fight. You know. And by the end of the night.
So what you were doing was what those kids did to you when.
Yeah, years ago.
You were just.
And I had no business doing
it. You talking shit, shorty? Just that type shit?
Exactly. So the roles were reversed.
Right. You
know? But I was a sucker. I wasn't like really about that.
Right.
You know, it took me a lot of drink. It took years later.
Yo, what's up? You like snakes?
You know.
You fuck with my terrarium?
Corny, man. Corny.
Yeah.
Way too old. I knew better. Right. You know, I thought I knew better.
And so what happened?
So we bumped into some kids by like Tompkins Square Park. Me and my boy had a fight with one of them. Yeah, I swear to God, this motherfucker whistled. The guy who was fighting went, like a whistle like that.
Yeah.
And yo, dude started hopping over the fence from the park. It was like 5 o'clock in the morning.
Shut up.
I swear to God, they jumped in and it was an ass whooping. I had like Timberland trees like stamped on my forehead. They fucked me up. My balls are bleeding. like they kicked me in my asshole and my nuts. That sort of beating. You know, that's a different beating when your balls are bleeding. Needless to say, that was a turning point in my life. I got the shit kicked out of me.
They stomped the Tupac tattoos off the shirt.
Oh, for real, man. It was so silly.
Laser removal off the Tupac shirt.
But I was angry off that. And then, like, it changed. I was in high school, and I was real angry. And that was a crazy part from like 18, 19 to 23, 24. I was very like, I was in a weird place because I truly didn't care. Like I was like, I've been to, you know, that sort of shit. I didn't care. Like, I really thought that being locked up or hurting somebody didn't matter to me because I was hurt so much, you know. But I grew out of that and eventually got better. But I was angry for a long time, you know.
And what would you do with that anger?
I don't know. Like, now that I look back at it, I think I never really did anything with it. What I would do was get high, you know?
Get high and drink, right.
Yeah. You know, and now I realize that. It took years to understand, like, why did I want to drink like that or hang out like that, you know? Yeah. And I think it has something to do with it.
Yeah.
You know? Because the thing about getting, like, fucked up is, like, at first it's, like, for fun, right? And then you realize when you do it in abundance, like, I'm covering some shit.
Right,
and
right.
And then you start pulling off layers. And those things that you're like, oh, shit, I'm not over that, are still staring you in the eye. They're still sitting on your shoulder. It's very strange.
Yeah.
And you're almost embarrassed to admit it. Because, like, really? Fucking 35, 40 years old, I haven't gotten over that shit?
Right.
You know, so it's embarrassing. You don't want to admit it. It leaves you kind of vulnerable. Like, what the fuck? You don't want to admit that vulnerability?
Well, there's a thing where, you know, when you start drinking, you, like, lie about how much you drink to seem cool. You know, to like fit in. And then after a while you drink so long, you lie about how much you drink so you don't seem so bad.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's that like reversal.
Yeah.
That you were talking
I've heard
about,
that before,
you know?
And that's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, when did you start comedy?
I started in 2006.
Oh, so how old were you?
25.
Oh, so that was right around.
Yeah.
Did you go to jail at all?
No, but I got arrested.
Locked up and arrested and everything. Yeah. But no, like, real time.
No.
No college numbers.
No. No football, no college numbers.
No peewee football numbers.
You know, and it was crazy. What's interesting is, like, how they say when it comes to, like, partying and, you know, sober, like, it could be, like, big changes in your life can inspire or promote your drinking and hanging out, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it be negative or positive, right? So, like, 25, you know, I got a job that I like. I'm working at an event space, and I'm feeling good and kind of, I got some money saved, you know? But I recently cut my finger on a table saw, right? So I went through, like, a physical, and you know that.
Yeah.
So, like, I went through a lot of physical torment, emotional anguish.
Were you fucked up on the job, or you just...
No. I cut my finger on the
sober?
Table saw. Sober? In my apartment.
Oh,
laying on
okay.
some hardwood floor.
Uh-huh.
Whew. You know? But that inspired my comedy, because I was like, yeah, I'm scared to do stand-up, but if I dealt with that sort of pain...
Right,
I could deal with embarrassment of not doing well on stage.
Right.
So that really pushed me to do comedy. And at the same time, I was reading a Frida Kahlo book. you know the artist, right?
Yeah.
And she was fucked up off a trolley accident.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, damn, she tapped into her creative side after she got into that trolley accident.
What happened in the trolley accident? Did they have to stitch her eyebrows together?
Yeah, she got impaled by the rail.
No way.
Yeah, like through her her stomach.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And it came out that she was in the hospital for like 2 years. And then she became a painter after that. She always thought about it, but then really tapped into her creative
side. You're like the Frida Kahlo of the Lower East Side.
So I was reading that book when I started.
That's
going to
be the name of the episode. Frida Kahlo of the Lower East Side.
Dirtbag. Yeah, so... That's where it started. But then I would do stand up, and I wasn't getting like fucked up like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then stand up, I started getting fucked up again.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It was more accepted in that world for me. You know, it was just like, you know, I would drink all, you know, all I want, whatever. So that was like, it was like waves of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you have a lot of liberties with stand up. You know, you're at a bar. A lot of times it's free drinks, you know. People would expect you to drink.
I remember I was supposed to do some bringer at Laugh Lounge with you once back in like 2011. And like it got canceled and I showed up and I like didn't bring anyone, and you're just sitting at the bar drinking a Heineken, and you're like, show's canceled, pa. And I was like, oh, I didn't bring any. You're like, don't matter. The show's canceled. I was like, all right. Yo,
so I started comedy.
And then a week later, you saw me at Caroline's. You're like, that was great. You're like, nice to me. I was like, hey, what's
I was
up?
Nice to you at Laugh Lounge. I was never mean to you.
No. You were like, I was like, hey, do I still get a drink? You're like, no, you got to pay for that, dog. No, that didn't happen.
I was always nice to you.
Yeah.
I wasn't that. I don't conduct my business like that.
No. You were always nice. That's it was just funny. One of the first images I have is you just sitting alone at Lamp Lounge just fucking drinking a Heineken.
The show was canceled. You know what my first image of you is when... You were doing a show with Joe Narvaez at Caroline's.
Yeah.
And you had these long fucking curls, and I hated those curls. You look like a wet cocker spaniel. It annoyed me so much because you were so eager and overenthusiastic about all of it. But I liked you, but I was like, those fucking curls, bro, they were like mid-back almost. And they look wet.
They were down to my shoulder. Yeah.
Fuck, man. It was so obnoxious. And you were like... super enthusiastic about life. Like, you're like, oh my God, I love stand up. Asking dumb questions and shit. But I always liked you. I liked you a lot off the bat.
Oh shit. You took me to a gig in the Bronx. And I remember we did it. And then, like, afterwards, I just like hung out and I was sober and you were drinking. You just stayed getting like drunk at the bar.
What show was this? Fuck.
Oh, it was at some fucking hookah lounge or some bullshit.
And it was a shitty show, I'm sure.
Shitty show. I did all right. I just like made fun of myself as being like the white guy in the fucking bar or whatever.
Fuck, man. It's like a blur.
And I remember on the way back, I was like, this is great. I want to do this every night. You go, hang out with me and you can, cuz.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Oh man, remember we did that show at we did a show, fuck man, there's so many that we done.
Which one?
It was me, you, Sim.
Oh my God. Yes. At the bowling alley.
Oh God. No, it wasn't a bowling alley. Maybe it was
in Long Island.
Yes that was awful,
dude. It was so bad.
Remember Sim?
Oh my God, dude, I bombed so bad. Sim bombed and was so drunk, yeah. We had to wait in the car for him to sober dangerous. Up to drive us home.
Yo, did he drive us home?
Yes. And then do you remember the guy that came up to us was like, I work at NBC Universal.
Yes.
Here's my card. I can get in touch with the president. I know people at SNL. We're like, oh, wow, thanks. Bowling alley, Long Island. It turned out he was a window washer.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my God. You have a great memory. I do remember that.
Yep.
You know, sometimes after shows, you have to entertain people's bullshit. You know they can't
help
you.
Right,
it's like they're just talking out the ass. Like, I knew that guy was like, what? NBC? Right. No. Like,
yeah.
You work in the NBC building cleaning up trash, and which is fine.
Right.
But don't make it seem like you could do, you know, like you're a.
Yeah. You're drunk off 3 Miller Lights at a bowling alley. Yeah. And you're talking weird, fucking man. All this bullshit.
And that's not the first time I came across someone like that. Like, oh, yeah, I can hook you up. You know, keep on doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's weird. I think people mean well.
That was one of those shows where, like, we were standing outside and people were coming up to us, and they would go up to you and be like, great job. And then they'd look at me and be like, uh-huh.
That's the worst, right? Every comic has dealt with that, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, you end up, you fucking catch an L, you bomb.
Yep.
And then, you know, your homeboy does great. And they're like, oh, my God, you were so funny. And they look at you like, you did good, too.
Yeah.
Or they just go, Keep your head up.
You got up there, man.
Yo, it's not easy.
Yeah. It's not easy. Fuck. You did your thing. Yeah, dude.
Yeah, you know what's funny, man? I'll say no to gigs that I feel like could potentially be that bad. Because sometimes that is set up for disaster.
Uh-huh.
You know, sometimes it is set up for disaster. And I'll say no. I say no to a lot of that shit now.
Yeah.
You know, I just, you know, fuck that, man.
Uh-huh.
Like, I've been through that shit. I'm not doing that shit.
Do you remember we did that gig for, like, those Haitians at Jersey City College for, like, sickle cell anemia?
That wasn't that long ago. It was like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember
you
that?
You did both of them with me? We did two of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The first one was okay.
And we show up and they were like, hey, by the way, you have to be completely clean.
Yes.
And you and sweat through your button-up shirt.
The first one I did okay. The second one, I ate it. Like, they liked me the first year. They were like, yeah, come back next year. But remember the last year, I said something like, I said, like, shit. And they're like, like, I'm going to say, the lady's like, you can't say that. While she's eating, like, fucking oxtail or something, right? They like they had, like, a buffet.
Oxtail.
Right? They were eating, like, some real good food.
We made them switch rooms.
Judging our comedy.
Because they had kids dancing in the other room. I'm like, no.
Yo, we walk into this. Yo, first of all, the show started, like, at 1 a.m.
Oh.
And they had kids still up.
Yes. And it was a dance competition.
It was a dance competition, and it was like a benefit for sickle cell.
Uh-huh.
And it had to be completely clean, but they wanted me to do like 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And no one cared about comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one, there was like, the age was from like 5 to 92.
Uh-huh.
The audience was crazy weird.
Yep.
Yeah, I bombed on that show, bro.
And right before it started, do you remember they had some guy give his testimonial about like, how he was like gonna die, and then like you know the fundraiser like helped save him and everything.
Oh God! Now we got some comedy people.
Yeah.
I still do gigs like that. You don't, right? You move past that, motherfucker.
Woo, baby. I just had a real.
Yo.
Yeah.
That was a dirtbag gig.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll do, you know, those gigs end up paying well, though, man.
I know.
They'll pay like, you
I'll
know.
Take them.
Yeah,
throw
man. But you really earned that fucking.
It's work.
It's work,
it
man.
It is work.
Yup. And then you
going through 45
you get mad
minutes
at comedy.
Of material in 10 minutes.
You get mad. Yeah, because when you're not doing well, like, you're 45 to an hour, what you think you have shrinks to like 8 minutes.
It's
you just
a
burn
nightmare.
Through it.
A nightmare. A complete nightmare. You burn through it, and then you look at the clock, you forget everything, and then it's just, and then everyone's, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you have to do your time. And then you're talking, words are coming out of your mouth, and you're like, can I fake an injury? Can I pull the fire alarm?
I've asked, can I get off stage?
Nuh-uh.
I did that recently. I've been doing comedy for years, and the other day I asked, can I get off?
Nuh-uh.
I'm not lying. I did a gig, and I said, I'm done. Like, I'm not, this is like.
You said, can I get off?
Can I get off? Like, and I told the book, I said, I'll give you $100 back. I think that's fair.
No.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yep, I was doing a gig with DeMeo, and it was a cop gig.
Oh
and I always,
God.
I don't know why, I love DeMeo, but I don't know why he books me for these benefits. I bomb on them all the time.
Dude.
Yo, dogs, it was like 400 cops with their mistresses and shit.
Oh, my God.
They're all having like, you know, they're serving dinner. There's
right.
no stage.
Right.
There's no light. I'm on a carpet with a mic that's going in and out. Yo, and I didn't have them at all. And I had to do 30 minutes. 20 minutes in, this guy looks at me and he like feels bad for me. I said, you don't have to do that. I'm getting paid anyway. Like, don't do that. Because he's like that, like, cringing for me.
Uh-huh.
And I don't do that. I'm getting paid anyway. It's fine.
Uh-huh.
I'm fine. And I said, but this shit sucks. I said, DeMeo, am I done here? I did 20 minutes. Like, I'll give you $100 back. And DeMeo goes, nah, you got to do your time. I was like, fuck you, man. I put the mic in the stand. He laughs. The host comes up.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah. But the thing is, you get like a thick skin. Because when I first started, that shit would have set me back.
Uh-huh.
You know, I got over that shit like, you know, that night. I was like, I looked at the check. I was like, fuck it.
Right.
You know, but, you know. And there's people who could, you know, and you know, and the thing is, there's people who could grab a room like that.
Right.
You know, it was my inability to really not want to. Like, not that I didn't want to, but I wasn't going to go and try to, like, do some crowd work with some, you know, go into, like, make fun of somebody. Because that's really not my style.
Yeah.
So that's, like, outside of my element, you know. Like, it was just weird. I just wanted to do my shit.
Uh-huh.
You know, and those motherfuckers were, like, involved in something else, like 400 people.
That's so funny.
Yeah, dogs.
Can I get off?
Yeah, and I was like, can I get off? Am I done? And then I mentioned Hennessy in the set, and this guy goes, oh, yeah, Hennessy! That's what he said. After the show, Hennessy, and you was mad funny!
No.
Hennessy! I was like, what? That wasn't a joke. I just said, So people were just like
a word.
Yeah, it was just a word.
Oh my God.
They were smashed. Yeah. You know? And once again, like I always say, like when I go through something like that, I'm like, there was probably a way of handling that better than I did. You know, off the bat, or maybe going into crowd work. But at that point, I was just so stuck to my shell. Like, nah, fuck that. I'm not giving them anything else but what I...
Dude, one time I did a gig at a fire hall, and...
God, I hear horror stories about those.
Dude, it was so packed, and half of the fire hall was in almost darkness because the fluorescent lights went out in half of the fire hall, and then the other half of the fire hall was had the bright fluorescent lights up, right? And so... I was featuring, and Gino Visconti was headlining, and I went up, and it was just dismal reaction, just arms folded, no one is liking it, just terrible, whatever. And then afterwards, this woman comes up to me, we're outside, and she goes, "Can I say something?" I go, "Yeah." And she goes, "Listen, I get it. I can tell you're funny. But you weren't funny tonight." And she goes, "That man over there, you know how he called that man a faggot and he said that woman was a whore? That's funny.
No one
wants to hear about you and your bicycle. No one cares.
That's hilarious.
Call someone fat. Call someone gay. That's funny. That man is funny. That's you can so be funny, but you weren't funny tonight." And I was like, Okay. All right.
That's so funny. You know what's interesting about that? The gigs that I'm telling you, we're talking about, a lot of times when you go calling a dude like, "Oh, look at this. How long you been a faggot?" Like, that's what gets a response.
It's insane.
It's insane. And actually, the gig I'm talking about, that's what was said by, like, the host. And they he got him with that shit. He's like, "How long you guys been gay?" And I was like, what?
What? What world?
Yo, it's so funny that you say that, because that's exactly how you got them.
It was just a room full of Mookies and John Johns?
No, it's a room full of cops and fucking firemen.
Right,
that's
right.
What that shit is. Yeah. Dirtbags.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, just closeted men just that grab each other's ass in the shower. "I'm not gay, you're gay."
Fucking dirtbag shit, man.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's like, do I even want to... You can get those people without... saying that stuff or flipping it on its head and calling them gay in a way that's not just making gay the punchline.
I think my problem is, like, and I'm quick to, like, fuck it. I'm just gonna do my shit. And some people try to figure it out. Like, you know, I don't. Like, if I see that not on board, like, and I know it has a potential being that, I'm like, fuck it. It'd be shitty. Right. I'm not going to try to, like, you know, dance and, like, you know, create a dialogue with one person. Right. I don't even care. I really don't. And that's not, I don't know if that's a good thing. I don't know if it's a good thing.
Right.
You know, like, you should probably be a little more like, let me see if I can play with this a little bit.
Yeah.
I'll do some shit that I have in my head, maybe do something observational that's going on. But then after a while, I just stop trying to mail it in.
Yeah.
You know, and I can mail it in.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I can mail that shit in.
Post Van Chacon.
Fucking post match cone.
Rains, leader, snow.
Word.
That's great, man. Yeah. Well, this has been fun, dude.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, thank you. I really enjoyed talking with you.
How's everything with you?
We're out of time, folks. This has been
appreciate
good.
You, man. I appreciate the time. How long have you been here? It's a good amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah, this has been good, man. I appreciate you, and got to have you back, and we can... next time we can talk about sobriety.
We didn't talk about that?
No, not really.
I was kind of like dancing around it, right?
Uh-huh.
You tried to lure me in.
A little bit. I was enjoying your stories about Lower East Side. And
they make me feel fun. That's the thing about podcasts.
What?
Is that you end up opening up a lot quickly.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I want to do like a good interview or good like.
This is good.
No, but I'm saying like. I kind of leave these things like that was a fucking therapy session. Like that's some shit you don't share every day.
Right, right.
You know? So thank you for making me feel bad.
Good. Good. I'm glad. That was the point.
Because you're not a professional. You're not going to help me while I'm on the train alone contemplating suicide because of my childhood.
Yeah. Well, it's good to see you've gotten over those petty issues from when you were younger. Wow. You got bullied. Big deal. We all were. Oh,
right.
You know, you're not the only one with pet snakes, Sergio. If you've got pet snakes, call in.
Yo, if you got a snake you want to get rid of, hit me up. I take in free snakes.
Taking free snakes.
You should see me on Craigslist. I'm on Craigslist looking for free snakes.
Nuh-uh.
It's a problem.
Are you serious?
Yo, the other day, I'm sorry. I know we got to go. The other day, I'm on the phone. Like, and I'm hiding, like, I'm hiding from my wife. Like, I'm texting a mistress. No, I'm texting a guy who's selling a 7-foot boa constrictor. No. I'm like, what's the rehoming fee? He's like, $100. I'm like, ooh. So I'm like, what does he eat? He's like, frozen rats. I'm like, oh my God, that's awesome. I'm like, does it come with the enclosure? He was like, it lives in my closet. I'm like, oh, that's so spooky. And I'm like, can we meet up so I can take a look at it? He's like, no, if you look at it, you got to buy it. I was like, oh. And like my wife's like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, nothing.
You're talking to a bill collector.
It's so weird.
You lie. You're like, I'm talking to another woman.
Exactly.
I'm trying to meet up for an appointment to get my dick sucked. Leave me alone.
Fuck.
Ah, shit. That rules. Well, thanks, man. I love you, dude.
I love you, man. Thank you for having me, brother.
Anytime.
Well, folks, that's the episode. It was a good one. It was a nice, fun chat with an old pal. I love his stories about his snakes. I went to his house. Oh, I have so much fun when I go over his house. I play Uno with him and his daughter. And I beat him up pretty good in Uno one time. And then ever since then, they have definitely avenged that loss and really rubbed it in. The last time we played Uno, his daughter slapped Uno down, beat me, and then got up and did the floss dance. And, now I am on a warpath to fucking win in goddamn Uno. I don't know if you noticed, but that little drop at the beginning, I started to record some episodes at Stand Up New York Labs. I want to give them a shout out. Give me a space to record in. And it was nice to record in a studio. And we'll see how that goes. I'm excited to see such great heights that we reach with the podcast. Little postal service reference. Come see me live. Thursday, December 6th, I'm at Atlantic City Comedy Club, Tropicana, in Atlantic City. Friday, December 7th, I'm at Philly Comedy Club, 9 p.m. Saturday, I'm at Ken Flash Theater in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. IanFidance.com for tickets to all of these. December 19th, I'd love, love, love for y'all to come out and see me at Caroline's on Broadway. Wednesday, December 19th, 7:30 p.m., $10 tickets with promo code Ian. What else are you going to do on a Wednesday night, huh? Hear a joke and share a smoke. If you've seen me before, if you've never seen me, if you've heard about me, if you've never heard of me, this would be a good one to come out to and check out. 7:30, New York City, Caroline's on Broadway. You can't beat it. It's going to be a good time. I got Andrew Collin, Monroe Martin, Chloe Hilliard, all buds of mine. We're going to have a good time. I want to pack it out. I want to bring the place down with some love and really enjoy ourselves. And that's about all. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. And I can't wait to talk to y'all next time. I love you. Bye.